Reading from Bridge of Birds, a novel of an ancient China that never was, by Barry Hughart. Chapter 10. It was a grand funeral. Li Kao was delighted that he had been able to murder somebody who thoroughly deserved it, and his reason for murder was that the ancestress, in her own inimitable way, was deeply religious. An example of her piety was the immense mausoleum that she had erected for herself, assuming that some day she would condescend to join the gods. It was a giant iron pillar more than 100 feet high, with a burial chamber in the center, and the message that she wished to preserve for posterity, engraved in huge characters above the entrance. If the history of the ancestress is lost in the passage of time, I imagine that the scholars of the future will be rather puzzled by her epitaph. Heaven produces myriads of things to nourish man. Man never does one good to recompense heaven. Kill, 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 kill. Another example of her piety was her fondness for Lohans. I don't mean the statues of Buddhist saints, such as the 142,289 that can be found in Lungmen. I mean real Lohans. A real Lohan is a saintly monk who has given up the ghost while seated in the meditative mudra. This is considered to be a sign from heaven, and when the deceased is discovered contemplating his navel, with his legs crossed, the soles of his feet turned up, and his hands lying limply upon his lap with the palms up, his body is carefully wrapped in layers of burlap. The burlap is treated with successive coats of lacquer, and the finished product is a real saint whose preserved body will last for centuries. If the lacquer is properly applied and the body is placed in water, it will last forever. Such lacquered Lohans are extremely rare, but the ancestress possessed no less than 12 of them. Those with nasty minds suspected that more than one of the saints had been peacefully contemplating when an agent of the ancestress slipped a knife between his ribs. This may or may not have been true, but the ancestress was unquestionably proud of them, and brought them out for all great ceremonial occasions. In the days that followed the demise of Fainting Maid, mourners gathered from all over, and the most illustrious erected sacrificial tents along the road that the funeral procession would take to the cemetery. They brought private orchestras and even troops of actors and acrobats, and there was a great deal of socializing among the nobility. More and more people poured into the estate, including countless bonzes who were employed by the ancestress to pray day and night for her soul, and the affair rather resembled a festival. The great day dawned with a drizzle. Clouds hovered overhead throughout the morning and early afternoon, and it was hot and humid with a sulphurous smell in the air. Henpecked Ho, who had willingly agreed to help us, muttered grim warnings about evil signs as he walked from Count to Marcus to Duke. Shaggy black beasts with eyes like fire had been seen in the woods, said Henpecked Ho. Servants had seen two ominous ghosts, a woman in white and a woman in green, who had warned of demons. And when a search was made of the pleasure pavilions, the carving of a demon had indeed been found, with an iron band around its head and a chain around its neck. A bronze candelabrum had floated through the air beside the lake of the fifth fragrance. "With 7 flames!" hissed Henpecked Ho. And I hope that no one will judge that sweet old man rashly when I report that at the funeral of his daughter he was having the time of his life. A great roll of drums signaled the approach of the funeral procession. First came outriders in double rows, followed by servants waving phoenix banners and musicians playing mournful music. They were followed by long lines of priests who swung lighted censers of gold, and then by the coffin with the 64 bearers that designated a princess. As the bereaved fiancée, I had the place of honor, wailing and tearing my hair as I walked beside the coffin. Next came soldiers from the army of the ancestress, who carried an immense canopy of phoenix-embroidered yellow silk, and beneath the canopy were bonzes, who pulled 12 bejeweled carts. In each cart, seated in the meditative mudra, was a lacquered lohan. The saints were looking down approvingly at the visible signs of the piety and grief of the ancestress. She had opened her treasure chambers to provide suitable offerings to the spirit of the departed, and items of immense value were placed at the lohan's feet. Of course, everyone understood that the ancestress had no intention of burying her wealth with fainting maid, but the display was customary, and it was also designed to make lesser mortals turn green with envy. After the burial gifts came 4 soldiers who were carrying the state umbrella of the ancestress, and beneath the umbrella marched her chief eunuch, who was carrying the great crown of the Sui dynasty upon a silken pillow. Then came the great lady herself. An army of servants groaned beneath the crushing weight as they carried her sedan chair, which was covered with a canopy of phoenix-embroidered yellow silk, with silver bells at the sides and a golden knob in back. In case anyone wonders why she used the phoenix symbols of an imperial consort rather than the dragon symbols of an emperor, the answer is simple. The imperial dragons were embroidered all over a large silken pillow, and the ancestress was sitting on it. I will not describe the ceremony of the burial in detail, because I would have to begin with the 3,300 rules of Chu etiquette, which would send my readers screaming into the night. But I will mention that the body of my beloved had been covered with quicksilver and dragon's brains, and that I had been quite disappointed when I had discovered that the latter were merely Borneo camphor. Fainting maid could not presume to share the mausoleum with the ancestress. Like all other family members, she was buried in the common dirt in order to spend eternity at the great lady's feet, and I was required to pour handfuls of dirt over my head and wail like a man demented as I flung myself upon the grave, while the aristocracy made critical comments concerning the artistry of my performance. Hooded monks surrounded the grave, banging bells and gongs and spraying incense in all directions. Their leader had his hands clasped piously in prayer, or so I thought, until his real hands slipped slyly from his robe and neatly picked the pockets of the Marquis of Tzu. Henpecked Ho ran around with wild eyes, babbling about evil spirits and demons, and who could doubt it? Lightning flickered evilly in the distance, and terrible things began to happen. Prince Han Li, for example, was engrossed in a profound theological discussion with one of the hooded monks, and when the prince was next seen, he was lying in a ditch with a large bump on his head, divested of his purse, jewelry, red leather belt studded with emeralds, silver-winged cap with white tassels, and knife-pleated white mourning garment with a gold-threaded design of 5 clawed dragons. Screams and roars of rage were lifting from the pavilions of the wealthy, whose valuable funeral gifts had miraculously disappeared. Lady Wu, whose beauty was said to rival that of the semi-legendary Queen Fei Yen, was carried into the bushes by a creature who had no ears or nose, and whose eyes were as yellow as his teeth. We all have our little weaknesses, but I must question the judgment of Cut Off Their Balls Wang when he abandoned his fellow hooded monks to disport in the bushes with Lady Wu. He missed a great deal of excitement. It was obvious that Henpecked Ho's warning had been correct and that the funeral of Fainting Maid had been attacked by demons. Only an immediate exorcism could save the lives of one and all, and Henpecked Ho was nothing less than magnificent as he led the Grand Master Wizard and the 49 assistants, who had fortuitously arrived with the hooded monks, and soon the cemetery was shrouded by rolling clouds of incense. Henpecked Ho bravely waved the banners that represented the 5 directions of heaven, while wizards who wore cosmological mantles and 7-starred tiaras sprayed the graves with holy water. Drums nearly deafened us as Ho and the wizards grappled with invisible demons, swinging peachwood whips and swords that were engraved with the 8 diagrams and the 9 heavenly spheres. They stuffed the nasty demons into jars and bottles, which were stoppered and sealed and stamped with closure decrees that forbade them to be opened throughout all eternity. In the middle of all this, a miracle occurred that could have converted the most stubborn atheist in the whole world. An exceptionally saintly lacquered Lohan was admiring the diamond-encrusted imperial scepter that the ancestress had placed at his feet, and apparently he feared that the other funeral gifts might be defiled by demons. So he stood up from the meditative mudra and began making a tour of inspection. Bonzas screamed and fainted in droves, and even the ancestress, who had been screaming, "Off with their heads!" turned pale and drew back in fear. The lacquer glinted like dull gold in the sultry light, and the saint appeared to be floating through the clouds of incense as he drifted among his fellow Lohans and inspected each gift to make sure that it was safe. The last gift was inside a small jade casket, which the saint picked up and opened. "Got it!" he exclaimed happily. Unfortunately, the light coat of lacquer had wiped 50 years of wrinkles from the Lohan's face, and the ancestress sat up straight. "You!" she screamed. "You and your damned praying mantises nearly ruined me with Emperor Wen! Soldiers! Seize this fraudulent dog!" Master Li took to his heels, clutching the jade casket, and I hopped up from Fainting Maid's grave and raced in pursuit. The army of the ancestress ran after us, and the diversion was a godsend to Cut Off Their Balls Wang, who emerged from the bushes and gathered his men and began stealing everything in sight, and confusion degenerated into chaos. Then the storm that had been hovering all day broke with a bang, and lightning and thunder joined the drums of the wizards and the howls of the victims, and blinding rain became an even better cover than rolling clouds of incense. We escaped quite easily and reached our hiding place, a small natural cave in the river bank. Then we stripped and dried off, and Li Kao opened the casket and held it out to me. Inside was the most magnificent ginseng root imaginable. No wonder the ancestress had included it among her most valuable possessions, as Master Li had foreseen, and the aroma that came from it was so powerful that it made my head spin. "Ox, this is truly extraordinary, but the root of power in no way resembles the great root that Henpecked Ho described," said Master Li. "Of course, Ho doubts that his root was ginseng, and we must pray that this will do the job." I was convinced that the children were as good as cured, and I cannot describe the joy in my heart. The rain soon ceased, and the clouds drifted away, and we tiptoed through a thick, swirling mist. Henpecked Ho was waiting for us at the entrance to the cemetery, and his eyes were sparkling, as they had been when Bright Star passed safely through the door. We started off through the graves, and as we approached the mausoleum of the ancestress, we heard the faint sound of shovels.
"Oh, I rather suspect that some of the scum of the earth that cut off their balls Wang recruited are digging up your daughter,"
Master Li said thoughtfully.
"Do you have any objection to having her coffin plundered?"
"None whatsoever," said Henpecked Ho.
"My beloved wife and her 7 fat sisters provided some rather expensive jewelry, and I seriously doubt that my dear daughter deserved to take it with her."
There was a good deal of iron beneath his meek exterior. We heard the sound of shovels striking the coffin, and then the sound of the lid being removed.
"This stuff any good?"
asked a voice that was oddly familiar. There was a pause for inspection, and then another oddly familiar voice answered,
"First rate!"
The mist cleared enough so that I could see a blade glint in the moonlight.
"You use the knife," said the first voice. "I'm scared of corpses."
"Oh, we can't let them desecrate your daughter's body," I whispered.
"Hair and fingernails," he whispered back.
"What?"
"Hair and fingernails," Master Li said quietly. "It's a very ancient practice. Grave robbers dig up the bodies of ladies of quality and clip their silken tresses and flawless fingernails, which they sell for a high price to an expensive courtesan. The courtesan claims the hair and fingernails to be her own and gives them as a fidelity gift to a wealthy lover. The lover assumes that the lovesick lady has handed him the power of life and death. Any decent witch could use such things to destroy the donor, and is inspired to reply in kind with immensely valuable fidelity gifts, and thus many a departed beauty has continued to bankrupt lovers long after her demise.
A rather interesting form of immortality," said Master Li.
The shovels were pitching earth back into the grave to delay discovery and pursuit, and I stuck my head through some bushes. My eyes very nearly popped out of their sockets.
"Who, pray tell, is shoveling earth so that it piles up neatly on the other side of the hole?"
snarled pawnbroker Fang.
"In answer to your question, my esteemed colleague," hissed Ma the Grub, "I would advise you to piss upon the ground and examine your reflection in the puddle."
Li Kao stuck his head out beside me, and his eyes narrowed as he examined the unlovely pair.
"Strange," he said thoughtfully. "Destiny, perhaps, since pawnbroker Fang is not the sort of man who would write down all he knows in his files. How do I look?"
"Look?"
I asked stupidly. "Lacquer holding?"
I examined him with a slight shudder. The lacquer was cracking, and he resembled a 6-month-old corpse.
"You look ghastly," I whispered.
"Careful with that shovel,"
yelped Ma the Grub, leaping back in fear.
"You almost trapped my shadow inside the grave."
"Why don't you tie your shadow to your body with a cord, like a sensible person?"
pawnbroker Fang grumbled.
"Splendid. Superstition has its uses," Master Li said happily.
Li Kao slipped from the bushes, and a lacquered Lohan drifted eerily through the mist. The horrible specter moaned. Ma the Grub toppled upon the half-covered coffin in a dead faint, and pawnbroker Fang dropped to his knees and covered his eyes, and a hollow, haunted voice with a thick Tibetan accent vibrated through the night.
"I am Tso Jet Chonu, the patron of ginseng. Who dares to steal my root of power?"
"Spirit, spare me," howled pawnbroker Fang. "I knew that the ancestress possessed such a root, but I swear that I did not know where it was hidden."
"Not the lesser root,"
roared the patron of ginseng.
"I mean the great root."
Oh, spirit, only one great root of power exists in all the world, and no lowly pawnbroker would dare to touch it, Fang sobbed. Who has my root? Where has he hidden it? I dare not say, Fang wailed. So Jed Chonu lifted his horrible face to heaven and extended his hand for a lightning bolt. The Duke of Chin, screamed Pawnbroker Fang. It's hidden in his labyrinth.
The terrible Lohan stood lost in thought for nearly a minute. Then he flicked a finger.
Begone!
Ma the Grub's faint was not what it appeared to be. He vaulted from the coffin and passed Pawnbroker Fang in 20 steps as they raced away into the mist. Li Cao was looking thoughtfully down into the grave, and then he got down on his knees and reached for something. He stood up with an object in his hands, which he turned this way and that in the moonlight, and then he walked back and handed it to Henpecked Ho, who yelped in delight. It was a fragment of a clay tablet, and it was covered with the same ancient ideographs as the fragments that Ho had been working on for 16 years, but it was big enough to contain whole paragraphs. In the distance, we could hear that his wife and her 7 fat sisters had joined the ancestress.
Off with their heads! They howled.
And Henpecked Ho wondered whether his joy might be made complete.
Li Cao, in your journeys around the estate, did you happen to encounter any more old wells? He asked hopefully.
I would advise using an axe, said Master Li.
An axe, yes, an axe, by all means.
We started off again, toward the wall beside the old well. Li Cao hooted like an owl, and a dog replied with 3 yelps and a howl. We said our farewells to Henpecked Ho, rather tearfully on my part, and Li Cao climbed upon my back. The patch in the wall was now a cleverly painted piece of canvas, and I pulled it aside and raced across the empty corridor. As I began to climb a rope ladder up the side of the opposite wall, I glanced back and saw that Henpecked Ho was holding the precious clay tablet in one hand, while his other hand wielded an imaginary axe.
Chop, chop! He chanted happily. Chop, chop, chop! Chop, chop!
The mist swallowed him up, and I swung down the other side to cut off their balls Wang and his scum of the earth. It had been 20 years since they had enjoyed a windfall like the funeral of Fainting Maid, and they begged Master Li to stay as their leader. We had other things to do. I was off like the wind, racing across the hills toward the village of Khufu, while Master Li rode upon my back, clutching the root of power.